Schroeder versus Schroeder.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Ben Maxwell. Along with my esteemed colleague, Tom Dorwart, we represent the defendants and the appellants and the mother, Maria Michaelis, in this action. Now, like many of these cases, this case involves a dispute between the father, Dr. Clayton Schroeder, and the mother, Dr. Maria Michaelis, regarding various activities related to the physical and legal custody of their minor child, Lexi, who's currently 14 years old. And specifically, the issues at hand are, what do those terms mean? Physical custody, what rights does that bring with it for the parent exercising parenting time, and legal custody. What does that mean both in a broad scope and in a day-to-day scope? And that's where the parties disagree, and that's where we believe the district court grossly erred in this case. In summary, Schroeder and Michaelis have been litigating various matters related to Lexi for over the last decade. And the most recent disputes involve various matters related to Lexi's extracurricular activities, her school, her health care appointments, and telephone contact. Now, prior to December 2015, the parties both exercised the joint physical and legal custody of Lexi. However, in December of 2015, following trial on competing complaints for modification, the district court changed the situation and such that the district court left the physical and legal custody otherwise intact, but awarded the plaintiff, Dr. Schroeder, final, quote-unquote, final decision-making authority. Also in conjunction with that December 2015 order, which we believe is exceedingly important to the facts of this case and how trial went, was a provision that the court included that said, quote, neither party shall schedule activities during the other parent's parenting time. One party cannot unilaterally enroll the minor child in activities or sporting events that's going to affect the other party or adversely affect the minor child, end quote. However, following that December 15th order, the party still couldn't get along. So here come more competing complaints for modification. We go have another trial. And at that trial, both parties had competing contempt actions against each other. And like I said, they both had competing complaints for modification, each seeking the sole legal custody of Lexi. Following that trial, the district court awarded Dr. Schroeder, the plaintiff, the sole legal custody of Lexi. And also, in conjunction with that award, ordered Dr. Michaelis to pay $10,000 in attorney fees to Dr. Schroeder in conjunction with that. So as the court knows, we've assigned multiple assignments of error, and as time permits, I'll touch on those. But I believe the most crucial error that the district court had in this case was it simply failed to give any credence whatsoever to Lexi's testimony in the in-camera proceeding. Now, first off, it should be noted that the record's clear that Dr. Michaelis had to fight to even get this in-camera testimony for a 13-year-old. We had to file a motion. It was contested. Dr. Schroeder filed a motion to refute that. He submitted an affidavit basically saying all the ills that were going to come to Lexi if she's allowed to testify. Mr. Higgins, in his elegant nature, stated that it would be a travesty because this is a place where rapists and murderers come, even though obviously the in-camera proceeding was going to be in chambers. But so we had to fight for this, and we finally got the right for Lexi to be able to testify. And it's our opinion that the district court gave it no credence whatsoever. And I'm going to butcher this, but I'll say, in Bobierczyk versus Marotti, 2003 Westlaw 22998160, this court applied the standard that the desires and wishes of the minor child, if of an age of comprehension, regardless of chronological age, when such desires and wishes are based on sound reasoning, should be considered. And in that case, the court, in fact, reversed the custody decision by the district court because they didn't believe that the district court gave the minor child's testimony enough credence. And I think that court needs, you guys, this court needs to do the same, because it was painfully obvious from the get-go, and with all respect possible to the district court, it was readily evident that the judge planned to give no credence whatsoever. And I think there's two comments that the judge made gratuitously that are highly indicative of that fact. First, while I was cross-examining Dr. Schroeder, when Dr. Schroeder was trying to state why he did not believe that Lexi should testify, even though he had previously been on the stand and talked about how gifted she was, how academically accelerated she was, how brilliant she was. These are verbs he used, or adjectives he used to describe her. But yet he doesn't want her to testify. So as I am pointing out the hypocrisy of this, in cross-examination, the district court, not on any objection by Mr. Higgins, not anything else, gratuitously says, let's get the quote. Let's get this real quick. She can be the most brilliant person in the world. I could care less. She is 12, 13-year-old daughter. As we all know, kids don't make the best decisions. Even though they may be brilliant, there are some kids that are just absolutely average, middle of the road, but they have a hell of a lot more common sense than some kids too. It just depends upon the kid and what the situation is and what the times of the day are. I mean, when I was a kid, I had a heck of a lot more responsibility than kids nowadays do simply because of the situation. So, you know, I'll accept that she's brilliant. But from there, just because she's brilliant doesn't mean she makes good decisions. All right? Just so we understand that we can get away from that, we can get to the next question or the next issue. End quote. Then, after the in-camera proceeding, when Judge Battalion asked several questions to Lexi and gave the attorneys an opportunity to ask Lexi questions, before I had the opportunity to do so, Judge Battalion stated, quote, all right, now Lexi, whatever. And I may just have a few more questions, but I have to make a decision in this matter. And basically, the decision I have to make is who gets to make the final decisions in these matters. But I can tell you, you know, what you tell me, what you've told me so far, may not have anything to do with my decision. My decision is basically based upon what your parents have told me so far.
Well, he obviously didn't want this child to think that she was carrying the weight of this decision.
And I will give you that. That may be a fair point. But I think when you read that quote in conjunction with what he gratuitously said in open court, with no objection, with nothing, just basically dismissing this, the fact that he's going to give her any credence.
What is it that what is your position with regard to what Lexi said that is so contradictory to what the judge did?
Well, I think if you look at it, and I've set it forth in my brief, I've counted 25 separate incidents where the testimony of Lexi lined up with the testimony of Dr. Michaelis and or contradicted the testimony and the wishes of Dr. Schroeder.
Because I looked at her testimony. I didn't see anything compelling either way.
Well, I think if you read it as a whole, and you, like I said, you look at 25 things, and I've said them about in my brief, where I believe she says she wanted to play with this volleyball team. She wanted to play with this volleyball club.
I'm going to stop you on that one because the volleyball thing is what sticks out in my mind. Okay. Your argument being she wanted to be on this elite competitive volleyball team. But she also said most of the girls that play on that only play one sport, and I don't want to do that. I want to play multiple sports.
Sure.
So maybe she doesn't really want to be on that volleyball team.
And I understand there was the, you know, I can't think of an artful way to say it, but the wishy-washiness of a teenage girl. And I think a young girl who probably did not want to alienate herself from either of her parents, and I appreciate that. But it just seems very compelling to me that the judge planned to give no credence whatsoever from that from the get-go. And this is, by all accounts, by all the evidence adduced at trial, this is a highly, highly intelligent young woman. She was 13 at the time. She's 14 now. And so I just think all that was glossed over and that decision was made even before she got up there. So we believe on that premise, you know, certainly the judge erred in granting sole legal custody to Dr. Schroeder. Now, I'm running out of time, so I would like to jump forward to the attorney fee issue. As the court's aware, Judge Battalion ordered a $10,000 attorney fee to be paid by Dr. Michaelis to Dr. Schroeder. We believe that is grossly excessive and completely unsupported by anything. If you take a look at Nebraska Revised Statute 25.824, that provides very clear circumstances in which the district court should award attorney fees.
There's other basis for fees than frivolous claims.
I understand that. But when you look at the big picture here, there was two competing complaints for modification. Dr. Michaelis did not initiate this. Dr. Schroeder filed the first complaint for modification,
right,
seeking lower custody.
He was successful.
He was, but I mean, what is she? I guess my point is this, is that she didn't initiate this. She didn't cause these fees to be incurred. There were no dilatory tactics or...
Well, he might disagree with that.
Well, by the action, sure. But the legal proceedings came to be because of he initiated by filing a complaint for modification. And so what was she to do?
Well, this was not just an isolated event. This was what, the fifth or sixth time these folks had been...
But both parties.
Right, I understand.
Yeah.
But I mean, this is something that's been going on for, as you said, almost a decade. And this judge had heard the most of it, from what I can tell. Mm-hmm. So where is there an abuse of discretion? Because that's our standard of review.
If we're talking about the awarding of the sole legal custody, I think it's the whole thing. You look at the abuse of power, the independent witnesses that testify to what Dr. Schroeder would say, how he would puff his chest out around town saying he was a legal guardian, even before he had sole legal custody. And then in regards to the attorney fee issue, the judge didn't find Dr. Michaelis in contempt. Like I said, there was no dilatory actions. We never delayed this litigation in any way whatsoever. There was no need to file any motions to compel because there was never any discovery served. And she was a party essentially defending herself, filing her own complaint for modification to seek legal custody when Dr. Schroeder had already done that. And so I don't think she had any recourse. And so when you just look at the scope of the facts in this case, $10,000, that number was picked out of air. That Mr. Higgins.
Well, there was an affidavit that was close to that amount.
Right. But I'll tell you where the $10,000 came. In closing arguments, Mr. Higgins picked out a number and said it. And the district court picked it. And there is zero evidence supporting that award of attorney fees, in my opinion. So, and with that, I think, Chris, thank you.
Thank you.
Higgins?
May it please the Court, Judge Bishop, Judge Reedman, Judge Pirtle, and Mr. Maxwell. Your Honors, I spent a bit of time reciting the facts, the history of the case at the beginning of my brief.
Judge Pirtle and I were on the most recent case, so we're very familiar with it, and this is, in fact, my third time, so I'm quite familiar with what's been going on. So you don't need to get into that.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. I'm grateful for that. Judge, I have to admit to you that when I saw the appeal that was filed, I don't want to sound too arrogant about our claim, but I didn't see merit in any of it. And I'd like to just a couple of things Mr. Maxwell said. First off, Judge Bishop, you did key in on the fact that Lexi did ultimately testify. Judge Reedman, you did also. And there were two real big issues that everybody was worried about with Lexi's testimony. One is whether or not these phone calls were made. Well, we saw Dr. Michaelis admit that she's getting irregular calls just about every day. And except for the Disney cruise, 10, 14 days, she was getting her calls. Dr. Schroeder and both Lexi testified that they made an attempt to call her every day, but oftentimes there was no signal. And then Lexi actually testified that she got through. So that seems resolved by the testimony of the child who was promoted by Dr. Michaelis. The other issue was this business about sports. I'll agree with Mr. Maxwell that, in fact, Lexi says lots of things. She says she wants to do everything. I mean, that's youth. The whole world is your oyster. But she also is a serious person, and when she was pressed, she said, my friends who do elite sports are, this wasn't her word, they're rather one-dimensional. And she didn't want that. She wanted to have a variety of activities. That's a reasonable way in for a 12 or 13-year-old. Now, we come to what is Lexi's... what credit should be given to her when it comes to making decisions. It seems to me it doesn't require argument to say that all intelligent people are not biconditionally equal to the set of people with good judgment. I mean, history tells us this, because Ted Kaczynski, Robert Oppenheimer, tried to poison his teacher at college. Brilliant people, just two examples we could go on all day, just to make the point, especially a 12-year-old. So that Dr. Schroeder felt that sometimes he has to replace his judgment for his 12-year-old daughters to help her direct a better decision. That seems reasonable to me. There's nothing, I don't even know how that could be objectionable. Now, if you take a look about, one of the things that I think plagued Dr. Michaelis' case is the bar kept getting set so high. And you'll notice in the brief, and this kind of language was used throughout the case and in the pleadings, the accusation wasn't simply that Dr. Schroeder was being unilateral. I mean, the burden was, if they're making this claim, is that he played nonsensical games. He was obstinate and played games. His decisions were beyond egregious. He made no attempt at cooperation or accommodation. He did it solely for the purpose of being obstinate. He did it to frustrate Michaelis' parenting time. His views are utterly preposterous. His mindset is ludicrous and grossly irresponsible. This is because they had a meeting. And since he had final say, he said, I'm going to pick this suite of activities. I don't agree with what you want. I've been given this authority. Now, I'd like to point out over the history of this case how Judge Battalion has really acted as a model of restraint, modulating the remedy that he's provided in each of these instances. In the first instance, though the court reversed him, he said, I'm going to try and remedy this by making the two of you go to breakfast once a month, right, and chat. Maybe that'll fix it. Well, that didn't fix it. Well, then there was an order that says, the phone, the problems, you'll try and work them out. You have to see doctors. I didn't do that part of the case, but there was a provision that if they had troubles, they'd see doctors about their parenting plan. And then His Honor modified the arrangement so that he kept joint legal custody, but then he said, well, I'll give Dr. Schroeder the final say. Well, that didn't work either. And you can see that what is described as Dr. Schroeder, again, hyperbole, puffed up his chest all around town, was he attempted to go talk to the people at the country club where his daughter was swimming without his knowledge up until a point, and these activities that conflicted with Lexi's schedule. He attempted to go to the coaches and the people in charge of these entities and disenroll her. He was ignored. And him saying, look, I have legal custody, I have final say, seems to be a problem, that this is somehow coercive and misbehavior on his part.
Well, did he represent that he had more control than he did at the time?
Your Honor, I did not see that in the record. He told these people that he had the final say. And one of the things that came up at trial is, in the medical world, the hospitals and entities refer to his rights as the guard. He'd be the guardian. He'd be the legal guardian. That's the only people they'll talk to. And they have to sort of translate what it means to have legal custody or joint legal custody with a say. In fact, this isn't in the brief, but it's in the record. Dr. Michaelis had troubles even going to the medical provider to make adjustments to the records because they said, we don't let both parents make adjustments to records. We don't let this happen. One of you has to have that. So Judge Battalion then issued another order and said, look, there's nothing about my order, the rest of the world, that says mom is diminished in her right to have records or information. So I think the judge went out of his way to craft an order that just hit the nail on the head. I mean, in fact, I can't imagine a way he could have modulated his power any better than he did. And Your Honors, I will tell you, do you have any questions for me? Because most of, just about all, everything I had to say is in the brief. Is there anything the court would like to ask me questions about?
Can you address the attorney fee, not the award of it, but the amount of it?
Your Honor, and it's the one number I don't have at the top of my head, but I know Mr. Maxwell and I both presented attorney's fees that either exceeded or walked right up to $10,000. I just don't have that. I know it's in the record. And so neither one of us, I don't believe, objected to the other's attorney fee affidavit as a reasonable amount of money to charge for this sort of thing.
And that didn't actually include the final day of trial.
Yes,
right.
Your Honor, that's correct. So I don't see how the court erred. Now, I will say this, and if you take a look at the portions of my brief I sampled, you see example after example of Dr. Michaelis just admitting, yeah, I did that and I didn't tell him. Yeah, I told him after Lexi told him, or I doing all these things that the judge, this is why we were in court. Please stop doing these things because it's just gumming up the machinery of this child's life. She's pulled in too many directions. She's weeping on the telephone. He can't get control over third parties. I think he needed to have legal custody in order to solve the problem. And I'll concur with Mr. Maxwell. 10 years. Someone's got to have final say. Trying to hold hands has not worked. This needed to be sorted out. And to Judge Battalion's credit, he sorted it out. Maybe we could criticize him by saying he should have done this sooner. But
This girl is 14 now.
Yes, ma'am.
And it's clear that she's a pretty capable, bright child based on the record.
Yes, ma'am.
And clearly these parents both need to be listening to her more because she expressed what her interests are. She expressed, in fact, her considerations regarding high school, which that's probably going to be the next big fight, right? I mean, we can see it coming. In the last opinion I wrote, I don't think this solution is probably going to fix these parents' problems, and it wasn't that hard to have that anticipation given the history. But Judge Battalion wrote in one of his earlier opinions, I don't know that it was in this one, but he said, if you love your daughter, you'd figure out a way to get along. And I believe that was said a long time ago, and it just doesn't seem to be happening. And it's remarkable that that young girl is doing as well as she appears to be doing.
Yeah, I will, but universally, whatever side of the case you're on, everybody's impressed by how well Lexi has thrived and succeeded and excelled, given all of the wrangling that's going on. I will admit that to you. I'd like to point out, you know, it wasn't that, and with all deference to the argument on this side here, it's not that Dr. Schroeder, if you really read through this material, isn't saying that he's not going to listen to Lexi. He doesn't want to have meetings with Dr. Michaelis and Lexi and himself to talk about Lexi's future because it didn't work. He's tried it before. It ends up in a screaming match and people fleeing restaurants and the child crying. So they came up with protocol. They trade emails. They make their arguments. They line their cases to one another. And then in the end, Dr. Schroeder makes the decision. It could be very well that all the decisions he makes for the rest of her lives are her life is the one that he wants. That could happen.
But did he include her when he had the authority to have the final say with regard to sports? Did he include her or give her notice that he was going to be visiting with those various coaches or teams to see about withdrawing her? Did he include her in that process?
Lexi or
no,
Dr. Michaelis?
Dr. Michaelis.
I don't believe that he did, Your Honor. I don't believe that he did. And I'll tell you why. The two activities were for the summer where the parties were ordered by Judge Battalion to meet in the jury room. They sorted out a schedule with the assistance of Mr. Maxwell, you'll see in the record, and I didn't object to this and I endorsed it, and there was no inappropriateness there. And so they came up with a plan. Then, later, we say Dr. Michaelis decided she wasn't going to listen. She said we didn't have those talks. So I don't know what to do when one party says we didn't talk, the other party says we did, and I think we presented some evidence that those conversations did take place, both in emails and in the jury room with Mr. Maxwell and Dr. Michaelis.
Great. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The case is submitted. Counsel, you're excused, and that concludes our first day of our June panel.